All right. Good afternoon. My name is Alora Eggston, and I am interviewing Vanessa Williams on behalf of the Oral History Summer School Project. We are in Hudson, New York, and the time is currently, it's about 3:16 or so in the afternoon. Vanessa and I are cohorts, or members of the same cohort together. She had just conducted an interview of me, and now I am conducting an interview of her. Vanessa, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Vanessa Williams. I use your pronouns. I am a member of the 2026 Oral History Summer School cohort up here in Hudson, New York. I live in D.C., I grew up in Florida, Jacksonville, Florida, and but all up and down the East Coast, and that remains the same today, here in New York.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this. So my first question for you is, could you tell me about something that shaped you growing up?
Something that shaped me growing up. I point a lot to my brother. Well, I have four brothers. I was raised with two of them. One of them is a twin. His name is Jonathan. We love him to pieces. Gets on my nerves, but we love him regardless. Heart of gold, amazing person. He's a friend. But the brother I think most about as far as shaping me or shaping a lot of like my worldview, the way that I move, who I feel like I want to emulate him a lot. His name is Terry. He's older than me, about a year and a half older than me, my twin. But Terry is autistic. Mm-hmm. Terry is, again, heart of gold, great taste in music, good taste in food. He does not use many words to communicate, but I'm convinced he's the funniest person on this planet because there are times when he will just be giggling in his room by himself, and I'm like, tell us a joke, Terry. I don't know. I point to him. It's autistic. He will like respond verbally to like yes or no questions, some pretty tight like closed questions, but he doesn't use many words to communicate, or not verbally very much. I think about him, and I feel like he, growing up with him, alongside him, has just, shaped me in really beautiful ways, I'm grateful to him to be a sister, I point to that dynamic, a lot, so with shaping, my empathy, my compassion, the patience that I always want to extend to people. I see like Terry does it naturally. I referenced earlier about like wanting to emulate, like, and like that's like part of the things that I try to emulate is his sense of like right and wrong and like doing, what's right. One of the ways autism manifests is in like correcting things, right? Like an example is like, when we went grocery shopping growing up and we would be like in a checkout line and he would see like a bag of like peanut M&Ms like in the, classic M&M box like at the impulse buy thing, right? He would just like naturally like correct it, right? Like it's a small scale, but it's very much like he's a good neighbor, and he's, looking out for the people around him, I don't know, I just love him, like him. We don't live in the same area. He is living with my mother in Houston, and quite a bit of my family is based out in Houston, and there's complication there, at least because I've got a pretty strained relationship with my mother. So I don't get to see him much. And that was a conscious decision. Any ties that I had with my mom were held because I wanted to still have uninhibited connection to Terry, right? Because she's been his caregiver for about a decade now, or his primary caregiver. But I just felt like the cost of being in community or contact with my mom was more destructive, more hurtful than being effectively like little or no contact. But it also meant risking connecting to Cherry, right? So that's something I'm still navigating. Happy to chat more about it. My relationship to him, and I think about, there's still hopefully a heck of a lot of life left for both of us. And right now there's some degree of distance, not at either of our fault. But it is something that is kind of stuck for me sometimes. My relationship with Terry has shaped me in really beautiful ways. There are some moments of like, they're like just seasons with every, you know, all parts of life, I guess. Right now, I don't get to see him as much as I'd like to, or communicate with him. We still text, and I'm grateful for that. My dad will update me and like some of the day to day or whatever, but never quite as close as I want to be. So shape me in great ways right now is a little, it's not as strong as I'd like it to be, but still shaping me.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm going to take a moment just to pause and reflect on what you said. It is not any assessment of what you just said. So thank you again for sharing about Terry and your relationship with him. He sounds lovely. So how you just mentioned how your relationship with him and these qualities of like patience and, you know, funniness and all of these things kind of like really influenced you. How would you say you've taken those lessons from him with you as you've grown as a person?
I would say, it was just like one of those things that like, I feel like there's always, because we were always like practicing those things, right? Like with Terry there, right? And by that I mean like anytime, like you're in preschool, in K-12 school, what have you, they're teaching like basic values, right? Like, or like you're watching, you know, like a sitcom and you're trying to teach like these basic values, and it's easy to like watch, to like passively, you know, take in a lot of like lessons around like patience or empathy or compassion, right? And not to say like those things like can't be effective like vehicles or tools like to doing that, right? But there's something, I would say like having Terry there at the outset, you know, I never had that phase, and I don't want to normalize it, but oftentimes, like, people, like, look at using the R word, right, or, like, you know, making these, like, really, doing the, like, picking on people with, you know, that are neurodivergent or have, you know, disabilities, what have you, it's just like more visible disabilities, it's like common commonly held, quote-unquote commonly held, that, like, you know, your kid, you know, and this is just, like, typical behavior, and, right, like, and then we gotta, like, you know, get that out of them. Like, I've always been like, I'm not gonna make fun of anybody, right? And I love my brother exactly how he is. And that's, you know, I think he's, perfect. As perfect as any human can be, right? Like, I wouldn't change him, right? It's this world that needs to change, to be better towards everybody, right? I felt like, again, like, just from an early age, myself, my brothers, our family, was just like, I guess, like, we're more inclined to be more patient, to, like, sense what is it that Terry wants or needs, and to also, like, you know, he's still my brother, right? He still gets my nerves. Like, he's still, like, exhibited jealousy sometimes. He's still, right, like, and, like, to be more in tune with that. I'm so sorry. I've lost your question. I think that, a lot of the lessons I felt like I had to practice a lot more from, like, an earlier age. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that, and I like the person that it's made me become, right? As is inherently, not to say that I'm always patient. I want to be more patient. I want to be more compassionate. I want to be more empathetic. But those are some of the qualities that I like most about myself. I think, like, again, like, from an early age, there was a lot of just practicing that, in our household. I love those qualities, and I felt like I saw it first in Terry.
Nice. Thank you. So you've spoken about your wonderful relationship with Terry and all of the things that you bring to each other's life. Could you tell me a little bit more about you as a child? Specifically, was there what was something you wanted as a child?
Something I wanted as a child. You know, one of the first things I think back to is I've always had a love for dance. Ballet in particular was like my starting point, I from a very young age I wanted dance, I wanted ballet lessons, and I feel like that's, you know, not quite a rite of passage or, like, you know, typical, right, but I feel like it's rather commonly held, right, that I'm cis and hetero and I'm a black girl, black woman now. I think, ballet is, like, one of those things that a lot of, like, caregivers just, like, tend to, like, you know, I'm supposed to, you know, do this thing for you or offer this thing to you and there's, like, some degree of that. Like, a lot of my friends, like, you know, took ballet classes probably when we were very young, it never, like, wore off for me, the desire to. We couldn't afford it. For quite a bit of my childhood, we couldn't. But it was something that I always wanted to do. I didn't let the fact that we couldn't afford it for the first number of years just to, like, stop me. I remember vividly, I used to go to our kitchen at night. And we have, it's like a tiled kitchen floor, and then, like, we had, like, sliding glass doors that would, like, lead out to our back porch. And so, like, if the lights are off on the back porch and the lights are on the kitchen and it's, like, dark outside, it's, like, just enough to, like, it's like a pseudo mirror. And I would just, like, practice, like, my positions. Like, there is this little, like, bar-like thing, and I would face the sliding back door, and I would just practice and put on some music and just, like, you know, do my thing. It was great. And that was like the first, like, number of years in elementary school. I remember at a certain point when I was in the fourth grade, so this would have been the year, like, 2000, 2001? No, not quite that. No, it was a little bit, probably, no. I was born in 91. I remember it was definitely, no, excuse me, it was fifth grade. It had to have been fifth grade when this was happening. But that started working, like, even longer hours. And very close to my dad to this day. But very long hours, and it was just, like, kind of inexplicable. We were, you know, working class. We owned our home, and we're never in any danger of being housing insecure. But there were a lot of SpaghettiOs, a lot of ramen noodles, right? And I mean, when I was a kid, I thought we were, like, rich. I'm like, Dad, like, this is the best food ever. Anyway, but I remember him, like, working, like, long hours at, like, different seasons. And Christmas that year of my, yeah, was it my fifth grade? It doesn't matter that much, but I wish I could better piece it together right now. But it was fourth or fifth grade. For Christmas that year, we got to, like, open up, like, one, like, gift on Christmas Eve, and it was, like, a leotard in there, and I'm, like, I'm convinced I'm somewhere on that spectrum, neurodivergent somewhere, and this is, like, one of those, like, why didn't I, like, make the connection, because, like, the next day, we're opening Christmas gifts, and then I saw the, like, you know, you're doing ballet classes, like, for this, you know, for the spring semester at what was called Bolero's Dance Academy, or, you know, whatever. It was definitely called Bolero's, Bolero's. And it was the dance, or a dance school, after school something, in Jacksonville, where I grew up, Jacksonville, Florida, where I grew up. It was great. Yeah, yeah. We could afford to, like, give, I think it was classes twice a week, and did that from January through, like, May. We had our big recital, like, that June, and I think my dad, like, didn't understand, like, how good I was. I was pretty shy about it, I'll admit, like, and so, like, I, you know, was hesitant to, like, show him, like, what I learned in class or whatever. So, like, it was a bit of a surprise to him, like, how talented we were, like, when we showed the recital. And he enjoyed everybody's performance that night. But, like, obviously, you know, I had a special appreciation for the pieces that I was in. But, I don't know, it was, like, such a special moment. And I guess I want to think back to my childhood, something that I wanted and got. And didn't get to, you know, do it for long because it was just financially was going to be too much of an ask. But it's special to me, still special to me. And I think it's something that I got to have at least for a little bit. I'm still practice in some ways, dabbling it. But that's something that I wanted as a kid. Just dance, ballet dance lessons.
Thank you. That's a beautiful story. If I can ask a quick follow-up, I think you sort of implied, but do you still dance now or no?
I don't dance as much as I'd like to. I haven't, I think I, like, off and on, right, I'll find, like, adult, like, beginner or intermediate classes and drop in. I've also, like, kind of dabbled in different genres. I've done a little bit of modern dance, studied a little bit of that in college. The college that I went to, they started building the dance department and dance, like, major. It's, like, my sophomore year, so it was never going to be formed enough for me to, like, major or minor in it. But I took a couple of classes, like, when I was there. When I was in grad school, I found, like, a, you know, relatively cheap once or twice a week ballet class. what was it? This guy named Kip did offered classes. And I've got a friend now in DC who does a lot of contemporary, so I'm dropping into some of those classes sometimes. So dance is still very much a part of who I am, how I think of myself, the way that I move. I haven't taken ballet in a little while, but it's always rolling around up in my brain, and there's always probably a desire to be dancing, but it's just not been as consistent of a practice, probably not since I took those classes in fourth or fifth grade.
Thank you. What does it feel like when you dance?
I feel so free. I feel like I sometimes feel like I have a hard time articulating myself verbally. I'm somebody who I think of me like having to like process. I need more time to process and to, you know, better. I think I need like a couple takes. There was a moment in yesterday's content when we were talking about, when I think Suzanne was mentioning somebody who's just like, they were like serving an interview and they feel like they needed like three takes to like get it right. And I've always found myself like actively editing the sentences and then I'll finally get to like, this is what I was trying to communicate. I like to be very precise in like how I speak, and I, you know, just want to feel understood or comprehended or clear in the way that I communicate. But like with dance, I feel like this is a way of expressing myself, and I think I care less about how it lands on people. Like I release that control I insist on when I'm speaking. Right, or even when I'm writing, right? Like I also really love to write, and I think I gravitate towards writing because it gives me that editing time, or it can, you know, gives me the space to do that without interruption. When I dance, yeah, I just feel so free, and I think it's just such a beautiful like mechanism for. Celebrating movement in the human body. I also like to share when I talk about like, my dancing story too. That hasn't always like felt this great. Like I mean, I told you a little bit about how like shy I was with showing my dad. But when you're showing something like that intimately, like that's like oftentimes like a lot harder than like an arena full of people, right? Like at least you're lost in the like the darkness of the like thousand or so seats that are there, right? Like when you're just like you and your dad, it's like, you know, like an audience of one is more difficult sometimes. It's just like when you care so much about this person, right? And then you need to know how much they sacrificed to get this thing for you. I've struggled to think of myself as a dancer because I know rehearsed dance, right? Someone says like, oh, do fifth position over there, or go do an arabesque, or you know, whatever. I'm like, okay, cool, got it. You're giving me a direction, and I'm making that happen. You're giving me choreography. You're telling me to do a certain routine or whatever, right? But like, I was always afraid of identifying as a dancer because somebody would be like, Vanessa, can you do this dance, right? Like, there's this like phase of certain dances, like in the aughts, right? Like this, like cranking that Soulja Boy or whatever, right? The idea of just like going to like a school dance. I did not go to school dances like at all, like in middle school, despite like caring so much about dance, because I'm like, I don't know what to do when it's just music, right? Like, there's a group of people. What are you talking about? Like, give me a stage. Let me strap on my leggings, right? Like, wait, let me go rehearse for a month, and then I can show you my skills. I had the hardest time, like, identifying as a dancer because I just could not, like, freestyle, or I did not like it. I remember one time my aunt, Ida, was her actual name, but I called her a puddin'. was her nickname. And she's just like, one time she's asking me, like, do you dance, Vanessa? And I'm like, and so I was like maybe 10, and I like had this like crisis where I'm just like, I mean, yes, I dance, but like, don't ask me to dance unless it's right, like a you know, we, it's a ticketed performance, right? Like, I don't know. Anyway, but I remember I said I didn't, I went to like one dance in middle school. It was like one of those, we had like a couple hours to kill, like after some sort of like, some sort of test. This is like prep for the like releasing us for like winter break, and you have the choice to either go to a study hall for like an hour or two, or there's this like this dance like in the gymnasium, and all my friends like went to the gymnasium. If I had my choice, if I wasn't so fueled by peer pressure, I would have gone to the study hall. Like that's how rampant, or that's how like fear struck I was by dancing, by freestyling, right, just, like, in the right. Anyway, I went, and my, for, like, the first 30 minutes, like, back was, like, glued to the wall. I'm, like, a wallflower, like, quintessential, and then, like, my friends, like, dragged me out to the floor, and I, like, sat there, like, cross-armed, like, looked away, like, you know, like, different directions, like, there was no, I don't know, the most awkward position I could probably take. But then I remember this was the year that Sierra, the R&B singer, dropped this song called 1-2-Step. And even though it's, you know, a very basic or simple dance, there are clear directions and there is choreography and it's something that I can do. And for that 3.5 minutes, Vanessa did something besides standing on the wall or standing in the middle of the dance floor. We 1-2-stepped, and then we 2-stepped back to the wall. It was fine, right? So I put back to that moment to like where I at least started becoming a little more comfortable with dance and dancing something outside of like rehearsed ballet or, you know, what would become modern and some West African styles as well. The relationship with dance has always been positive. It's been strong. It's been good. But I've become more expansive, like, in my practice and in my comfort.
That's great.
That's so good.
Oh, my gosh. I can picture it now. Just real quick for the historical record, and just because we're having fun,
yeah,
were there any other mid-aughts dances? Like, I remember you mentioned Soulja Boy,
yeah,
you mentioned 1-2-Step. Were there any other like dances in that vein that you learned how to do?
You know what's funny? Now I'm jumping like way ahead.
You're good.
My a pandemic writing project. This is moving like my writing back into it, I guess. But a pandemic writing project that I started, that I still want to. I keep on seeing like different opportunities to like submit to like literary magazines or whatever. Or like these are like a series of essays, so like probably like a nonfiction something. But like because of it, like that was probably like the inciting incident. I don't know, like inciting a moment of like, oh, you can, right? Like think about yourself as a dancer outside of this, right? And that's when I remember like going to like dances in high school. Like this was like the culture was very strong like in that regard. So like I really grew to love those things, right? So like yes, I cranked that Soulja Boy. I'm trying to remember other ones. There was the essays that I've started composing and need to revisit. Are in that vein, and like wherein like there's usually like an actual like name of the dance, but sometimes like in the music video there's like a choreographed something that people do. I'm trying to think of Young Jocks, It's Going Down. Like there's that, because I want to describe it for the listener, but there's this, it's hard for me to describe it honestly, but it's like there's this shoulder bounce and like you like it's almost like you're like revving like a motorcycle engine, like one side and the opposite side, right? So like there wasn't like an actual like choreographed, it wasn't like named anything, right? But like, you know, you're supposed to do that dance to that song, right? Like, and anybody that was alive and listening to that song knows that, and I'm probably like hits them like whenever they hear the song. Soldier Boy, oh, Walk It Out. There was, I never learned how to properly, no, okay, so there's this dance, there's the, oh, I can't remember the name of the group right now. The group name that's coming to me is, Cali Swag District, Dougie, or like, I think it was like Teach Me How in parentheses and then Dougie, right? Teach Me How To in parentheses and Dougie, right? But there's one other one, I forget what group it is. It might have been them, but if not, then somebody else. But they had that, you're a jerk, right? And like, I learned that I could jerk. Like, the jerk is like one part of the dance, but there's another part, it's called the reject. That's like when you're doing that like back step sort of something that I never quite got. The youth can do it. I've seen so many people do it. It just doesn't make any sense to me physically. But hats off to people that can. Either way, so I learned a lot of them. Have a lot of appreciation and love for this general culture of like they're called line dances. Electric Slide is another person. Cotton Eye Joe, right? Like just like this whole culture of like we're all going to be doing basically the exact same dance for the next 3 to 7 minutes depending on how long the song is. But what I also love about line dances, especially like of that vein of like the aughts, was that like there's some some degree of like alignment and like we're all doing like this the same movement at the same time. If there's like directions being given, the Casper Slide, I gotta forget about that one. But there's also like some degree of like encouragement of like do it your way, right? Like, I mean, what is it that teaching how to Dougie song is like, you ain't fucking with my Dougie, right? Like, it's like a little like, oh, like, it's just really cool to me that like there's this in one sense, like we're in community with each other. We're all, immersed in this, like, experience right now, like, on the dance floor, listening to the same song, doing, encouraged to do, like, a certain, like, movement. But there's also, like, I can't remember what song it is, but there's, like, but you can do it your way, right, sort of something. There's, like, that spirit of, also, like, there's no wrong way to do it, right? Like, you just be here, like, just be here with each other. I think it's beautiful. Getting at your question again, is that like I have started a series of essays like about my appreciation for the culture of like fine dances, especially of like the aughts, the music videos, the songs themselves, the dance and the movements. I wanted to get on my soapbox for a little bit and geek out about that.
Absolutely delightful. Absolutely delightful. So I guess that kind of makes a nice segue though, because I was going to say ask you about your writing, mm-hmm. but you just mentioned a lot of it is looking at sort of these line dances of the aughts, which full disclosure for the archive, I did as well as a child. But could you tell me a little bit more about your writing? Mm-hmm. You said it's one of your other preferred art forms too.
Yeah. I think early on I was told I was a good writer and I enjoyed it. I would say there were moments when like, I wished I was more of like a journaler. Like I don't know like why whenever I would like try to like take, and this is like very early, I have vivid like memories from like elementary school, like having like a diary or whatever, and then like trying to like write it, and it just felt like there's like shame associated. Like, it was just like having feelings, just like no, we don't write about it. It just felt like weird doing that. But I guess most of the writing that I had, like a lot of my writing impressions of my writing have come from. And my talent for like knack for it have come from like external affirmation, from like teachers,
Well, it doesn't make me appreciate, like, my form or my talent any less. But there are still times, like, as an adult where I wish I was, like, more, like, prone to, like, taking to, like, the written word to, like, just, like, process a little bit more. But, yeah, I mean, you know, from an early age, I was told I was a gifted writer. My gifted program coming up. Started in the gifted program when I was in the fourth grade. Yeah, fourth grade. And, like, once a week we had, like, a writing prompt as a part of, like, that day in class. Consistently, Ms. Johnson was my teacher, would, like, you know, choose, like, my responses to, like, read to the class as, like, a, you know, look at how impressive you are, and remembered that. And it was, like, you know, very fondly. I wasn't someone who mostly sought attention like that, but I did like getting recognition for the things that, like, I wanted to get recognition for, I guess. I remember don't love standardized testing myself, in fourth grade there was this thing called the Florida Comprehensive Assessment Test, FCAT. And in fourth grade there was a writing component, and the highest grade or score you can get was like a 6. I got a 5. And I was just like, oh my God, I have atrophied my writing skill. Like, I had this whole crisis. And it's like, I think, like, of the all the people that took it, I think there was, I believe one person got a 6. And there were only 2 5s, like, you know, that had come back. And, like, the most of them had fallen, like, at a 4 below. So there's still, like, a lot to be proud about, right? If you're, you know, someone who needs to have external, you know, validation and things like this, right? But I was just like, ah! Am I even a good writer? Like, I really thought I was, you know, gonna, like, an ace assistant, you know, whatever. But, yeah, I mean, I love the craft. If I had to pick a particular, like, genre, like, I really gravitate towards, like, essays or, like, you know, some exercise writing or reflective writing. I think I'm a lyrical writer. I've tried poetry. I don't think of myself as a poet. Have so much respect for people that do. But I do love lyrical writing, or, like, I think, like, vivid description and, like, really, like, touching at people's, like, sensory. And helping, like, paint a picture. So, like, in that sense, like, it is poetic. But the idea of, like, stanzas and verses and iambic pentameter, and I'm like, that's just, I'm going to leave it to the people who are more comfortable in that way. I love to read. It helps, like, inform the way that I write. And I think about, you know, a lot of forms of writing or reading, a lot of forms of reading or writing, and I love the written word. I love to write. I love it as a, again, I'm trying to get more comfortable, like, with just the, if no one else sees this, you know, who are you as a writer? I had one more thought. That's it. I guess I just, whenever I am, I guess I still, like, do take my own, like, opportunities to, like, do, like, writing prompts, essentially, like, which is fun. But I've got to also, like, I've also learned to, like, not make everything a writing prompt, because I'm like, you got to get things done, right? Like, your grocery list can't be a writing prompt. So in that sense, like, yeah, just, yeah, I like our relationship with writing, can still consider myself to be a writer. I like my style. Love, you know, people who write as well. I don't know. It's good practice.
Thank you. Goodness, thank you. All right, so we are about a little over halfway, so I'd like to switch gears just a little bit. You grew up in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. I know you're a museum educator in D.C. now. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned college, you mentioned grad school. I guess, where would you like to fill in the in-between? How'd you get from point A to point B?
So from childhood to now?
Yeah, so if you mm-hmm. want to talk about college, grad school, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, in-person college student. I graduated from high school in 2009. And love history. History is like my subject. I'm in an oral history workshop. I love history from like a very, very young age. And so I tend to gravitate towards my history teachers. And I remember Mr. McKay, Ben McKay, who, when I posted on Facebook about, I forgot to respond to him, but when I posted on Facebook about like getting this fellowship, he was like, you're making, he went to, and I'll get to this in a second, but like, you're making Davidson and Stan was like my high school, Davidson was my the college that I went to, but you're making us proud. Mr. McKay, like, this is, yeah, this is beautiful. Sorry, it'll make more sense in a second, but Mr. McKay went to my alma mater, well, what's now my alma mater, Davidson College, and I remember, like, when I was growing up, in Florida, there's a lot of push for people to go to one of two schools, FSU or UF. FSU was Florida State University, and UF is University of Florida. And also by the time I got to high school, like, there were other universities that started to make as a bit more of a name for themselves. I remember, like, elementary school, like, there was, like, beef between like different classes because like one teacher went to FSU, one teacher went to UF, right? Like, I'm gonna do the hand signals and everything. It was wild. But I remember my junior year in high school, like, being like laser focused on going to UF, Mr. McKay, like, gut punched, like, asked me, like, why do you want to go, besides the fact that you've always been told you should go to UF, or apply to UF, or you should want to go to UF, like, why are you applying? And, like, it shattered me. I did not have, like, didn't have the major I really wanted to major in, like, the, like, financial, like, aid package that I probably would have gotten, like, would have been, you know, like, not worth all the debt that I would have incurred, or this just was not going to be a good decision, like, probably in any respect. And, like, it was, like, honestly, one of the best questions I've ever been asked, but also, like, at that moment, I was, like, Mr. McKay, like, what do I do? Because this was actually coming at the tail end of, like, this conversation that he and I were having about Dave and Collins, just again, spoiler, like, where I went. The school's basketball team had made, like, a run to the Elite Eight of the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship that year. I think it was 2008. It's not like he didn't, like, he wasn't, like, prideful or proud. That's the word I was looking for. It's not like he wasn't proud to have gone to Davidson, but he just was just a low key person, right? So, like, I was aware of, like, where he went. He had, like, the pendants and things up, but, like, when, like, that they were, like, making that run, like, in the Cinderella story, like, run that year, he saw, like, the ties come out, like, he's, like, really, like, he's, like, talking it up. And I remember, and I'm so glad he didn't, like, he was so chill, because, like, I don't know, my social meter was at an all-time low, because I was just like, Mr. McKay, Davidson, who even heard of that place? Like, that's so dumb. Like, I would never, and he's just like, he returns to me, and he's just like, and they asked me that question about, like, why do you want to go to UF? Didn't have a response, and he's just like, followed it up with, like, if you check it out and you see that you like it, I'll write your recommendation letter. And I doubled down, and I said, like, okay, whatever, Mr. McKay, like, David's, you know, and then I checked it out, and I loved it, and humbly came back to him the next week and was like, so I found the recommendation letter, please? So, yeah, I had everything that I wanted. I was far enough from home to feel like I was having like a true, you know, experience away, but also close enough to where like if I needed to get back very quickly, or not even like planned trips, like coming back for like Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever, right? It was gonna be easy to like find a ride. There's enough of a contingent of people from Jacksonville where that could like drop me off or whatever, like on their way to like Miami or, you know, whatever. A small liberal arts college. I can just go and sit under a tree and in a hammock and, you know, read Robert Frost and, you know, whatever. Just really unpack my curiosities. And it's a college that really lifts up teaching. They're trying to have more of a research end of things, and I think that's great. It's beautiful. It like helps. It attracts like an even like wider like, you know, student base. But like, I did really love that like the teachers that are there like are focused on being skilled teachers, skilled lecturers, and it was very uncommon to like not have a truly creative and innovative teacher there. When I was there, I studied anthropology and education. So I was there from 2009 to 2013. I graduated in 2013. Very formative years for me. I had an inkling that I wanted to become an educator. Was confirmed pretty early on that I wanted to become an educator through this internship that I got the summer after my first year. After graduating, I spent a year in Boston where I was at AmeriCorps. What did I do? Oh, I was educating. I got a K-8 school, but I taught in the middle school. And that was it. It's again like a year long fellowship that wrapped. During that year, I applied to grad school. So I went to the University of Pennsylvania's grad school of education to get my master's in education. And then after that, I started teaching. Started teaching in North Carolina. Davidson, my alma mater, was in a suburb of Charlotte. It's in Davidson, North Carolina. And I taught at a private school in Charlotte proper from 2015 to 2020. I taught middle school social studies, geography, world history, and an eighth grade social justice issues seminar. And then for a year in 2020-2021 school year, I taught at the community school of Davidson. So it's like back in Davidson proper for that school year. And then after wrapping that, I reevaluated my relationship to the K-12 classroom and decided that I still wanted to work ardently support K-12 education and critical education, critical history, and started working with this organization in D.C. called Teaching for Change. Teaching for Change is a nonprofit that's national in scale, but I was hired to facilitate their local organizing work with educators with this program called D.C. Area Educators for Social Justice. It's a project of Teaching for Change, who did a lot of difference. It's the way that I like just talk about it in brief is that it's helping create space for educators to connect with one another, share resources on like critical social justice and social justice beginning in the classroom, and helping them organize and fight for better schooling experiences for all. Did that for 3 years, and it was Labor Day weekend 2021 when I moved up to DC and was based there with Teaching for Change. for 3 years, and then October 2024 is when I started at the DC History Center, or at DC History Center. Doing very similar work, but more focused on like public history. and I've been there, yes, since October 2024.
Amazing. Thank you. We're getting close to the end of our time, so I have some other things I could definitely ask you about, but I just wanted to make sure, is there anything that you want to discuss that I haven't asked about? Anything you want to talk about?
No, I can't think of anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess as we're sort of thinking about education and DC, so DC, you know, I've been to D.C., I've never been to Jacksonville, but, like, you know, big difference in between the two, I imagine, because, yeah, for the record, she's like, yep. Yeah. Do you want to talk about living in D.C.? Like, what's that like for you?
D.C., so my work with D.C. History Center has, and also with Teaching Pretend, excuse me, like, both organizations, specifically, like, my role in these organizations have been, like, laser-focused on treating D.C. like the hometown that it is. A lot of times people look at D.C. and what they see is... especially if you're not from D.C. And you haven't lived there. Even people that live there, I wish there were... I mean, people that transplant and, like, don't really take in all that D.C. has to offer, right? They don't see it as the hometown, right? They see it as this seat of the federal government. And they just think of D.C. as the mall. And, you know, the capital of buildings, right? And full disclosure, like, that's... I only kind of do things go to, like, that part of D.C., when, like, people that I know are coming into town, right? And even if and when we do take that part of D.C. in, which is so valuable, right? I also insist on, like, taking them to, like, so many other nooks and crannies and, like, really beautiful parts of D.C. that, like, are... that say so much more about D.C. As a hometown. Also, of course, I take them to D.C. History Center, right, and show them, you know, like... our collections and, like, a lot of the really great ephemera and the resources that we have. Because I've only experienced DC in a way that is, like, insisted on the hyper local, like the phrase that I typically, like, use. It's been really gratifying, and I felt lucky to have known it as that, because I think it's, like, what's held me down, like, through the shit storm that is being a neighbor to this. A physical neighbor, right? DC is only, you know, what's it, like, 10 square miles, something like that. Being in such close proximity to, you know, the leadership of the nation right now, it's been really it's heartening to see or to be a part of this community, there's definitely, I mean, obviously a lot of I've been dancing around, like, the tough parts, like, moved to D.C. in 2021. This is under Biden. Again, I've also got plenty of critique for him. And material conditions, it's undeniable that, like, they were better. Again, critique. Again, we'll always, right, like, but, like, we know that, like, at least... National Guard wasn't patrolling all the time, and, you know, there was at least some degree of, like, there was at least more efforts at pushing towards more justice, or they're more receptive to you know, not increasing the presence of ice. And what I'm trying to articulate is that, like, yeah, right now living in D.C., I don't like, I guess I share with people that the phrase that I use, that, like, I want to continue to be disturbed. I want to continue to, like, be disturbed, like, not normalize a lot of the abuses of power, and a lot of the deeply disturbing, dehumanizing, destabilizing forces that are being just forced upon residents of all types. I like to share with people that I also, like, there's just so many beautiful things, right? And I think because of my, I'll say, training or inclination to think of DC as a hometown, I think of all of its residents or people that are present there as neighbors that are worth defending. It's been heartening to see the way that people, like, band together, right? Like, I'm thinking about, like, especially, like the first couple weeks of the increase in, like, ICE raids and presence. There were, like, checkpoints that would just, like, you know, get put up, like, all of a sudden. And, like, you'll see on social media, like, stay away from 14th and U, because there's, like, you know, there's a checkpoint, right? Or, like, you know, myself and other neighbors at the time I lived in Brooklyn, that's, like, Ward 5. There are 8 wards in D.C. at the moment. And there are people who are, like, helping just transport people, right, that, like, are still want to report to their jobs because they got to continue to earn their living and support themselves, their families, or whomever else that they're supporting. But they, you know, can't just walk, you know, to work or just take public transportation for fear of being stopped, interrogated, deported, right? Or you know, have being disrupted, like, in, like, in such a terrible way. So people were just, like, you know, figuring out, like, ways to just care for, like, wider community, but, like, you know, saying, like, oh, I'll have to sign up for this shift and, like, take, you know, folks that work at Union Market, like, in my car, right? And, like, I won't be stopped, and, you know, so they're, like, really, like or, like, even, you know, there's, like, a checkpoint to, like, hit a U-turn, like, do not go this way, right? Like, it's just, it's been really heartening to see the extent to which people are putting themselves on the line, and it's unfortunate that it has to be done in the first place, but there are so really beautiful moments of, like, the people that, like, insist on, like, DC is the hometown, and not just capitulating and bowing to the powers that are currently installed. We're doing something and helping take care of one another. And we are keeping something to look forward to. And there's plenty of heartache, but there's plenty of celebration as well. I guess I'm experiencing DC, like, in its fullness. And I don't want to give this administration the satisfaction of, like, only getting of leaving me in a perpetual state of anger or hurt or frustration or confusion or anxiety, right? I'm feeling all those things as well. And because so much is, there was a lot of preparation and there's a lot of continued activity, demonstration, we don't lose hope. There's still people that are suffering, that are struggling, but hope is not lost. And so living in D.C. right now, especially, you know, working at an organization like that I do, it's I at least have no doubt that what I'm doing is valuable and what I'm doing is important for the historical record. And yeah, it's just been really gratifying. And I just know that we're going to see it through. Doesn't mean there aren't going to be plenty of pain points, but I wish I had like a more resounding like final thought on that. But it's, yeah, living in DC right now is as complex as ever.
Thank you for sharing all of those thoughts. So for, I hate to end because I'm like, there's so much more I want to ask you about. I guess we talked a little bit earlier about like what was something you wanted in your childhood. With all of this in mind, what's something you want for your future, mm-hmm. to kind of wrap up our interview? Mm-hmm.
My future. Yeah, I want. Yeah, I want us all to better care for one another. I feel like that's abstract, but that I feel like it's a pretty consistent wish for me. So I'll just reassert that idea. Oh, no, it's not re. This is the first time I've expressed it here, but I've expressed it previously, not on recording. So yeah, I'll just go with that.
To better care for one another.
Yeah.
Can I ask just a quick follow-up?
Yeah,
What does that mean for you?
I guess there's enough for us all to to live comfortably, to thrive. I think that if we take the time to pause and reflect and... So the metaphor that I often use when describing existing or moving in public or existing, right, is, I think I already said existing, sorry, but is that like it's a group project and we got to do our part. And that can, you know, be as simple as like make it however possible, like make space on the sidewalk. Right, or like, you know, abide by common sense traffic rules, right? Or I don't know, we're capable as a society. We got the resources at our disposal to like not have this like, I've got to elbow you out of the way so I can have the things that I need, right? Like, we can all have the tools and have our basic needs met. And I want people to stop falling victim to this survivalist mentality or individual, hyper-individualistic. I'm losing some of the words that I want to use, but... and just think about the collective. I know we do have like the resources that that we need to for everybody to be cared for, to be tended to. And they can hopefully thrive, whatever that means, right? And I don't want it to be cordoned off to just whoever can box somebody else out. Right. Better get to.
No, it's beautiful. Yeah. Thank you. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap up our interview there. Thank you for your time, memories, thoughts, ideas, Vanessa. This has been so fun. I'm going to take just 1 minute of, what do they call it? Room tune.
Room tune.
All right. So we're just going to sit quietly together for a minute and just kind of vibe for a second, and then I will shut off the recording.